Accountability Report. First up is the Library 2014 Departmental Review.
Thank you. I want to thank you for your ongoing support of the library. I also want to thank the library supporters who are in the room. If you're here as a library supporter, I want to wave at council.
That was nice to see, wasn't it?
So thank you all for coming. So in your packet, we start with the 2014 year review, the budget. I didn't do just the budget book pages because it doesn't really reflect the full diversity of our income sources. So if you look there, you'll see that 7% of our budget is from diversified funding sources, from the Friends, from the Foundation, from grant funding, and other sources. So we take our role as stewards of public dollars very seriously and actively seek other funding sources to do the programming at the library. And you'll see under our expenses, as with every other city department, the majority of our costs go into employee services. But even that, we have a very active Friends of the Library and a strong volunteer program. You'll see on the bottom the statistics that we had over 17,000 volunteer hours. That's over 8 full-time equivalent employees that our volunteers are integral in everything that we do at the library. They're huge support. And that the $23.07 is a national figure for to estimate volunteer hours. So you'll see that was an additional $400,000. And what isn't reflected here is the community is very generous on the material donations that they give to the library. On an average year, we do about, through the Friends sorting the donation, we add about $150,000 worth of donated material to our collection. So we really are doing our best to be a strong organization. And then you have the 2014 statistics. You'll see that that our collection continues to grow as we continue to add materials. Our circulation, we have 1.6 million items that go out our doors every year. And our online presence continues to grow as well. So people using the research databases, people going to our website to get information, that continues to grow every year, as well as our Wi-Fi sessions in the library, internet access in the library. The library is the number one place that people without internet access go to get it. And so we're at that place in the community. We answer a lot of reference questions and program attendance. We have a lot of people coming through our doors to go to different programs in the library. And our meeting room usage continues to grow. As so far in 2015, we've had 50 different organizations book our meeting rooms. So that's something that continues to grow. And you see that we turned away a lot of people. So even though we have a lot of community groups booking our rooms, we turn a lot of them away just because we don't have the availability. On the second page of the handout, it's our 2014 year in review. You'll see that it's organized by our strategic plan, so based on our goals. So we had a successful kickoff of the Rochester Reading Champions program, and I'll talk a little bit more, you'll hear more about that program in a little bit. We expanded the mini library program, which the Neighbors Read program is through the United Way. And then we have, you've probably seen the publicity for the Leadership Greater Rochester, where they're going to be adding 40 more mini libraries. And so not only do you, are people, the access to books out in the neighborhoods, through some of our surveying, we're finding that people feel safer in their neighborhoods when they have mini libraries. They're making connections with their neighbors, they're talking to their neighbors, and that's all good for our community. And we have the Wellness Corner. That's something that has started in the last year, and we've had over 25 community agencies that gave over 1,600 hours in that wellness corner. We partnered with places like Winona State University. Their nursing students have come over, Zumbro Valley Mental Health, the Workforce Center, to provide additional programs within the library at a place where people already are. And technology, we do drop-in sessions for the community. So when people have e-reader questions or computer questions or word questions, they can come and get help at the time of need. We've launched our teen space, our maker space, and our artist in residence program. All of those help to create connections within the community around creativity. We have an active teen library council. We have a couple members here today, and they provide help create the programming for the teens to make sure that it's relevant and what's what the kids want to do. Live streaming and the recording of library programs, that's been all the local debates, a lot of our programs, the PV Dialogue series, all those programs we record and people can watch them later if they cannot get to the library to attend. We've added a Skype lounge, so we've had people do interviews in our Skype lounge. We've had people keep connections with family that are away, are some of the examples of how that's used. And people can now book our meeting rooms online. And so that has made it easier for people to find out whether those rooms are available. And that's why that turnaway number is actually going to be lower, because we don't know the people who went to our website couldn't get, and the room wasn't available. We didn't have those numbers. So, and then we continue to build our infrastructure. So we have, we added meeting room C, which is another meeting room that we primarily thought would be used by the Friends of the Foundation and staff, but we have, is now where homework assistance is happening. It's where a lot of other community programs are going on, so that space is continuously in use. The Teenscape, we now have a more active space geared just for teens, and we have a computer lab and then that makerspace. All that came out of the strategic plan, and we said we need to change the space to better use the way the community wants. And we continue to look toward the future as we need to grow the library. And then I'd like to talk more about the Rochester Reading Champions program. As you may recall, last summer, you approved taking a frozen position and allowing us to fill it so that we could start this Rochester Reading Champions program. So the Rochester Reading Champions program really is about working with struggling readers. It's a partnership that has been absolutely incredible. It came out of our strategic planning. When we pulled the community together, we had a focus group that gave us 2 full days. And we asked them, what's your vision for the community? Not what's your vision for the library, but what's your vision for the community? And then how can the library help? They said to us, you have to do more around literacy. It's too important not to do it. And so we took a year, because we said there are great literacy programs already in Rochester. The Reading Center has good programs. Hawthorne has good programs. The school district certainly has reading programs. Where are the gaps? And that's where the Rochester Reading Champions program came out. You may recall when the police department did their departmental overview. The question came up, what else can we do besides continuing to fund police officers? And I'm not saying anything about what Roger's request is. That's not what this is about. But what you will see in the statistics that you have in front of you is literacy is a key indicator of success. 85% of all juveniles who interface with the court system are functionally literate. And only 4% of people who read well live in poverty. And there are states that estimate prison space based on the reading levels of third graders. If we can get our community to read better, we all do better. And so with that, I am going to turn this over to Gail Harris, who's going to talk to you more about the Rochester Reading Champions program.
And I know we're all going to be outshunned by our little people who will be joining us shortly. So I've just lost the first page of my notes. I'm going to guess at what I was going to say. Good afternoon. We're going to be good. So we are now almost at the end of our first year of Rochester United Champions. And I thought it's really been an adventure this last year. You know those plans where you kind of expect things to go like this? Well, our year's been a little bit like this, but we're still going up at the end. And I thought I'd give you a glimpse of what our year's been like through the eyes of some of those people that have been most involved, through the eyes of a tutor for our programme, through the eyes of a student, through the eyes of a parent, and through the eyes of one of our partners. That's the end of my first sheet. So, last July, five intrepid community members volunteered to take a 120-hour college-level training course in Horton Gillingham at the Reading Centre. Now, I think that's going over and beyond any dedication that I can imagine, because that's 3 weeks in July, middle of summer in Minnesota. I mean, in the middle of winter, I can understand where it's something else. But to sit in a classroom for 3 weeks in July, that's pretty outstanding right from the start. We all took the course, and we all were successful in passing it. And the thing about this course was it's a tested program, and it's effective in helping readers who are struggling. So the first person I'd like you to meet is one of our amazing tutors who took the course, and that's Jane. Jane is a former teacher, classroom teacher. She was part of our summer cohort. She, as you can tell from my accent comes from England, so I had a little problem with the American vowels. This is a phonic system. So before our midterm, Jane was mentoring me right outside.
She lost her short A right before midterms.
But we survived, we passed my midterm with Jane's coaching. We had a great camaraderie, and that's kind of continued throughout our program. So Jane has been tutoring a student at the Boys and Girls Club since last fall. For all of our presenters, I posed them a couple of questions last week. I do not know what their answers are going to be, so it's going to be a revelation to me as much as it is to you. So here you go with the questions that I posed for Jane. Jane, why did you choose to become a Rochester Reading Champions tutor, and what do you think about your choice now?
Well, it was about a year and a half ago that I was looking for a volunteer opportunity, the best way to use my time and talents. And I heard about Reading Champions and was intrigued because, as a former teacher, I knew firsthand that despite all of our best efforts in the school, despite all the interventions, all the time spent with our students, sometimes students still struggle. They needed a little something more or something different. So I attended one of the meetings for Reading Champions, and I heard all the statistics that you all just heard, and I learned that one of the goals for Reading Champions was to overcome the barriers that prevented children and adults from getting that little bit of extra help that they need, transportation, finances, etc. And then the real clincher was the fact that they were partnering with the Reading Center to train volunteers in the Orton-Gillingham approach, which is scientifically proven, and very individualized one-on-one tutoring. So I was pretty much on board from that very first meeting. They were still in the planning stages, so I had to kind of cool my jets for a while they got all their ducks in a row. But then I was right there with my volunteer form, with my fingers crossed, hoping I'd be accepted. And I was, to my surprise. So as far as now, a year later, having survived that intense training and tutoring for a year, I feel I'm a much better teacher. I feel a lot more confidence as a tutor. I see the growth in my student every time I meet with her. And I hear all the success stories from the other tutors. This is an exciting program, and I could not be more proud to call myself a Reading Champion.
Thank you.
No regrets.
Thank you so much, Jane. You know, there is help in our community, as Jane's alluded. been providing help to struggling readers for 60 years. Maybe more than 64 years. And it's amazing. It's an amazing program. They raise so much money to help with scholarships, but even with the scholarships, they only pay part of the amount. And lessons are now $50 an hour, so even with the scholarship help, there are still people in our community who can't afford to get that help. And as Jay mentioned, really our program focuses on two of the key barriers to getting help. Firstly, cost, and secondly, transportation. What we do is we provide our tutoring in partner agencies that already struggling readers frequent, like the Boys and Girls Club, like the Hawthorne Adult Education Centre, like Minnesota Teen and Adult Challenge, where we work with recovering addicts, and like the Adult Detention Centre, where you've heard from Audrey, the statistics are 63% are struggling with reading in the prison system. It's a big issue for them. So by going to places where people, where we know there are people who can use the help that we can provide, we're really meeting that need, aiming directly at that. We couldn't do this, however, without the commitment of our tutors. They have been absolutely, our volunteer tutors, they have been outstanding. They've given over above 1,889 hours of help to struggling readers in our community. And that's outstanding. So there are several of them here. So we also have some tutors who are going to be joining us with training this summer. So I haven't put them off by talking about three weeks sitting in a classroom. But Rosie Hansen, we want to say thank you to you, because we wouldn't have this program without you. A program without as well is our students. You know, the thing about struggling to read is it doesn't just limit an individual options. We know that parental involvement and support is really important. It's a key to academic success for children. So if we help a parent who's struggling to read, that's going to filter down and they're going to be able to help their children. So I would like you to meet our little scene stealers here. They love to come up. This is Susanna and her daughters, darling daughters, Serafina and Catherine. I'll tell them about you while you're standing here. So, Susanna is studying at Hawthorne Adult Education Centre. She also works at a care facility, and she's raising these two adorable girls. At lunchtime, Susanna goes and has lunch with the girls. She's part of the PEAR program, and she has lunch with the girls, and then they sing a song or they read a story together. So every lunchtime, they spend time together. So she's just a great mum. Susanna would like to, her aim is to be able to help her children with their homework. She'd also like to get her GED and become a nurse like her older sister is just doing at the moment. So I'd like you to meet Susanna. Susanna, you were born in Sweden. And what languages do you speak?
I speak Arabic. I speak Arabic and I write it. And I speak Dinka.
Very cool. I know how hard it is to learn another language just from trying to learn French and Spanish rather poorly in my case. But so learning English is a challenge, and how is tutoring helping you?
First it was so difficult, but when I meet you guys, I didn't know how to spell or write, like, and read, but now I able like to read and write. They can spell the word correctly.
Do you think it would be good for other English language learners too?
Yeah, I like the way you guys teach, because like people can learn how to read and write easily. And then like I didn't know the English rules before, but after I meet you guys, I know the rules. That's
That is absolutely, you would think this was scripted, but that is like the perfect segue into my next bit. So thank you, Susanna. That is perfect. Thank you. Is vital. About 85% of the English language follows rules and patterns. And so that's really what we cover with our students. We work through those rules and patterns. But we do not forget the other 15%, so we cover that as well, just in case you're worried. The program works best when our students and their families commit to at least 2 lessons a week. Because the program builds, as Jane mentioned, each lesson is designed for the individual learner. So that's why we can range our program from youth right through to adults. He's working so hard right now. For our younger students, so our range of students is very extensive. For our younger students, though, this does involve the cooperation of their parents. So our next thing is to have a look at the program through the eyes of a parent. So I'd like to invite Dawn to join us. He's a bright, engaging boy. He's ahead of the curve in everything except reading. He was a very good reader. Dawn signed him up for Watchers to Reading Champions at the Boys and Girls Club. Dawn, what difference have you seen in your son since he started the program?
Okay, since he started the program, he is more confident in reading. He doesn't struggle as much. Like when he's looking at a word, he's able to read it and sound out the words by all the lessons he's learned. He's excited about going to the lessons. If he misses one, he's really disappointed. So he's reading more fluently. And at school, he's able to read out loud now and not get so embarrassed in front of all the other kids. We had a lot of other programs at school that just wasn't cutting it. He wasn't able to read at his grade level, and he's finally reading at his grade level. So we're very grateful he had the opportunity to work with Dale.
He's a great kid. Actually, we've got a little surprise at the end because I videoed something with him, so you get to meet him. So thank you, Dawn. Our parents recognize the value of reading in their child's lives, and they want their children to succeed, and we're working together to make this happen through this program. So, looking back on our first year, we now have a number of highly skilled tutors who are trained, several of whom are here. We have had students at all of our partner locations. We've seen a growth in basic language components. And we've taken the program out on the road a little bit. Locally, we've spoken to Rochester Area Foundation, to AAUS, to Alpha Delta Kappa, which is the teachers group, gave us money for the program, as did the other two as well, actually. And we've even taken it nationally. To give you a little perspective, I'd like to invite Faye Bampley from the Reading Centre, just to kind of look back on the last year and tell us about anything that's really stood out for her. But before she does that, I have to introduce Faye. Faye is the Director of Programming at the Reading Centre. She's a fellow of the Academy of Organ Gilding Practitioner. She's a master teacher, course presenter. She's a wonderful mother, and she has been, she has been the most patient and generous mentor to us tutors over the last year, and we must have driven her to distraction countless times. Well, I shouldn't speak for others, I have probably driven her to distraction countless times. She has been our guiding light through the program, so thank you.
Well, yes.
Looking quite good at that double life, sorry. So looking back at our first year, what is your life?
This last year we had the wonderful opportunity to be invited to New York to speak at the Academy of Art and Gillingham's Practitioners and Educators. I was very excited about it, but even more so when I found out that we were going to be on the fellow speaking track, which means the most qualified people in the academy will be observing us, which caused Gail and I a little bit of nervousness. But our goal was that we would communicate that this is a sustainable and replicable program that we are doing, and it is set to help the underserved in our population who have not gained the literacy skills that they need. We got into our talk halfway through, and I'm standing there thinking, as Gail's talking, are they going to get it? Are they going to get it? And pretty soon, hands shot up all over the room. And we picked on one lady, and she said, this is replicable, completely replicable. And then another one was like, how do you do it? What? And we just had to calm them down. It was tangible. They could imagine it. They could see what we were doing. And it was beyond our wildest dreams of how quickly they would gain it, the understanding of what could happen. So what did I learn? That the Reading Champions has a future, not only in Rochester, but nationally.
Thank you, Faye. So in the past, if I wanted to share information with a colleague, I would have got up and walked over and chatted to them. Now I send them an email. In that country, we're moving from an industrialized-based society to a knowledge-based one, where the volume and the quantity of written information just grows exponentially. I mean, how many times have you sat at a computer, you've got through your email, you turn away for 5 minutes, and you look back and there's a whole lot more. I mean, reading is a key life skill today, and it opens doors, it creates options, it generates opportunities. As Audrey shared with her statistics, 14% of our population are not functioning at a level where they can manage this information. That's one in six people. Then we as a community have got some issues. What we do with Rochester Reading Champions is we increase the potential within our community. We release potential in our community. Talking about releasing potential, this is the last person I'd like you to introduce you to. So Aidan Dornstead was our very first Rochester Reading Champion student. As Dornstead, he started third grade reading at first grade level. By third quarter, he was up to his grade level. The questions that I asked him were what he thought of Rochester Reading Champions and how he uses reading now. And as you'll see, he's a very honest little guy.
Gail. So, challenges. The next page, really the expansion of the library is key. And as we, as I mentioned, 10,000 square feet were cut out when we built the building back in 95. We've exceeded all projections. And DMC has left it really up to City Council and the Library Board on what's the future of the library. And unless directed otherwise, we will plan to build in our current, go up on our building. It has been built to go up. We can go up two more floors. And like I've said, unless directed otherwise, we will continue planning in that vein. Our staffing request for 2016 is for a full-time custodian. And that's, we're a busy building. We're a well-used building. And we're also an aging building. So we, it's also part of our core values of being a welcoming place, and that means we need to continue to maintain the building. So that's our request. And as you can see from the support in this room, the library is a valued community partner. We are a safe, neutral, welcoming gathering place for residents and visitors alike. Any questions?
All right. Questions for Audrey? Mr. Mayor, then Mr. Hickey.
We've got the breakdown on where the revenues come from, 80% from city and county 12.
Yep.
What's the breakdown of the use of the library between city, county, and maybe visitors that are maybe in neither of those that are here at the clinic or wherever?
In terms of the count, I have them. I haven't necessarily. And it depends on what you mean by use. If we're talking straight circulation, which is traditionally what's been used, but that really doesn't reflect what happens in the library. We recently did a study where we asked people coming in the door, you know, where, you know, why did they come? Mm-hmm. You know, where did they, if they drove, or how did they get there? Because that's a question with parking and things like that. If they drove, where they parked. And then their connection to downtown. And we found almost 1 in 10 people who came into the library were downtown for downtown, you know, for medical reasons or other kinds. So we have a lot of visitors who come in our doors. And what we found in that study is that people's connection, visitors use the library to get connected to the community. You know, whether they go to our programs, it's a place where they can engage with the community because you can only sit in your hotel room so long. So the library is one of those places that our visitors go. But in terms of the county breakdown, I wouldn't know necessarily walking in the door. We could look at circulation, but that's not a true reflection of how it's used.
Good, thanks.
Yeah.
Mr. Hickey?
I want to say thank you for the presentation. Now, you had mentioned the mini library program. I'm not really familiar with that. Could you just discuss that a little bit and then what this expansion might look like?
Sure. So what the mini libraries are is they're boxes that look like houses.
Okay, I've seen that.
They're on posts that people put in their yards. And anyone in the community can register their mini library. And in partnership with the Friends of the Library, we'll help keep those boxes filled.
Okay.
So somebody can register, even whether they got the mini library through the library or not, they can still register. And so we provide those materials, and then anybody just walking by can get books. And there's no rules with those. So you can take a book, you can keep it, you can put it back, you can put other books in. It's really anything that's keeping kids reading. Yeah.
Thank you.
So we'll keep expanding that program.
Mr. Bilbeck. Audrey, can you talk a little bit about your summer hours and how you decided what those hours would be?
Right. We've had the current hours for actually quite a long time. I don't know off the top of my head. I think it's since I've been there, which has been since 96. So we shorten our hours in the summer. What I will say is there was one point where we asked for additional funding to open more hours. And we had, right about that time, we had done a community survey to say what's more important. You know, more hours, continue to do the program. Would you pay more to have more hours? And at the time, the support wasn't there. If we open, it will get used. Absolutely. And so, but it would take additional funding to do it. And I would actually be very supportive of doing it.
All right. Others? Ms. Means.
Thank you. This was absolutely a wonderful presentation. I just, I thought that Gail, and just want to shout out to those Rochester Reading Champions. When you mentioned about, I was just surprised when I read the percentages of how illiteracy affects your inability to be as successful, and also how poverty is involved in that. And it's just a wonderful assignment. You said that you are changing to meet the community needs as defined by the community, and you've demonstrated that here. And you know, the Skype Lounge, I was not aware of a Skype Lounge. And so you really are also keeping up with the technological enhancements. But I'm really interested in learning more about the Reading Champion and how you design your curriculum for the individual learner, or it's like the pedagogical learning style. And maybe we could hear a little bit more about that at some time.
Oh, and say Faye would be the person to ask.
We'll talk. I'll get that. The other thing you mentioned about the second floor, and that you, if things remain the same, you will continue to plan for that additional two-floor space. Is that space that you need now, or is that considering space that you think you'll need in, you know, the next 5 years or 10 years, or what is your plan?
We need it. The need is there now. So it's really up to the city council to help us find the path to funding.
City administrator, where's the funding?
We don't have any right now.
But my question was, is it for now, or is that going to accommodate your needs 5 years from now, do you think?
Well,
you projected that at all?
We would project that we it would take us out at least 20, 25 years, the plan that we have. Yeah.
Okay.
And really, after you go up to the maximum space that this building structurally will allow, in the next 20 years, if the city doubles, you're probably then looking at branches.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Bildebeck. Audrey, looking through your stuff here that you provided us, question, how much work do you do with the city school system?
We partner with them on in many different ways. For example, we took the bookmobile out and the book bike out and talked about the mini library program all over the city. Making sure kids know what the summer opportunities are. And the book bike is something new for 2015, so I hadn't really talked about that here. But it's a trailer with books in it that we have been taking out to parks and to events here in within a mile of downtown. And so we were, for example, at the Red Ball yesterday and at the Y for one of their events. And so we're talking to people, getting library cards, checking out material, making sure they know what's happening. So we partner with the school in a number of different ways, certainly with Hawthorne being part of the Rochester Reading Champions program, however we can.
Okay, anyone else? Mr. Campion.
I just wanted to say the one piece I walked away, you know, first, thanks for all of the data. It's really good to see how healthy the organization is. And two, all the volunteers being here, I think, shows, you know, their organizations are just able to connect with the community to draw that volunteer base, how imperative it is for an asset that's as important to our community as the library to have that volunteer core to rely upon. The other part I heard that I was, you know, perked my ears a little bit is I've spent a few afternoons now kind of before council meetings kind of loitering in the library and taking it in and maybe answering some emails. It's just that shift of how that is a primary access point for a part of our community that really needs access. And I think that's just a fundamental thing we have to make sure we protect, that ability for people who can't afford a computer, can't afford the internet, to be able to get on and access that sort of information is just fundamental to kind of lifting people up out of poverty. So just fantastic. Everything looks real good to me. So.
Because you're right, you cannot get a job. All your job applications are online. If you don't
Absolutely.
Have internet access at home, you have to go. If you want a job, you've got to get internet access.
All right. Anyone else? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very informative and lots of information.
Thanks.
My 8-minute presentation looks pretty good right now.
Thank you. You're
going to get us all in trouble.
Wow, I will. Everybody
off, please. Should have brought this many volunteers. That would have been the impressive part.
Yeah, I didn't know I was supposed to have that.
Sometimes I'll just skip your mic.
All right.
I'm the scrap.
That's a business card you got there.
Oh, I know.
All right, we're going to continue. We're going to continue with our next item this afternoon. We're going to hear a report from the Mayo Civic Center. Mr. Belts, you're going to lead off?
I have that privilege today.
All right, take it away.
Well, first of all, good afternoon. We have a new entity in the room, and I'd like to just take a minute to introduce your Mayo Civic Center Commission. And we're all very pleased to be here today. So if I could, ask my fellow commissioners, an outstanding group of volunteers, please stand. I'd like to introduce John Eichen, Mark Mitchell, Shannon Konepke, Heidi Mestad, Dan Nelson. We have been the group that has taken on a new and unique opportunity to assist in the direction of the development and redeployment of a very important asset here in Rochester. And Donna and her team have been a great help in this first year. So if I may, I'd just like to take just a few minutes to highlight probably what's in front of you, but I'll just share with you where the commission is and where we intend to go and how we intend to assist in taking the experience at the convention and Civic Center to a new level. 2014 was an interesting year of change, both organizationally and from a physical plant perspective, with renovation expectations on the horizon. The commission, with the leadership and staff of the Mayo Civic Center and the Rochester Convention Bureau, Visitor Bureau teams, addressed a variety of issues centered on establishing a clear path to our future. These issues included operational, sales, marketing, organizational opportunities, and we'll talk about those in just a minute. We'll just take a quick highlight look at the 2014 fiscal results and highlights. I think you've had several renditions of it put before you, but just generally, the center generated over $4 million of gross revenues in 2014, which exceeded the budget by $246,000, a positive variance of about 6.5%. Of that $4 million, just about $3 million were generated directly through facility operations. Donna and her team entertained 357 events, over 300,000 attendees, 64 concerts that generated $1.6 million of gross ticket sales. We also enjoyed many, many other civic events, including the University of Minnesota Gopher Band. If you look at the revenues, we had three areas that performed exceptionally above plan. First would have been our food and beverage retained fees and revenues, exceeding our plan by $108,000. That's a 14.5% positive variance to what we planned coming into the year. event revenues. That would include the facility rental and concessions as a grouping. Exceeded budget revenues by $43,232, a positive variance of 2.3%. And finally, our box office retained revenue of that $1.6 million of ticket sales. We exceeded our plan by $10,000, or a positive variance of 7%. So top line, the balance of the gross revenue in excess was driven by improved performance receipts, the legislatively directed portion of our hospitality lodging tax. We exceeded receipts there by $78,000. Note, I'd just like to emphasize that we're placing as a commission significant emphasis on this top line performance and results, as the commission recognizes that the future success of the Mayo Convention and Civic Center relies on developing new and appropriate revenue streams. We expect these revenue opportunities to deliver exceptional economic and civic returns to the community. These returns, we believe, will include incremental economic impact across the city and region beyond the physical entity of the center. We do understand, however, the expense management and effective controls are expected. And I'm pleased to say that 2014, the operating expense net flow through on revenues was a negative $19,000. $19,000. The MCC team has done an outstanding job of containing costs. It's important, it's important to note that most of our expenses are fixed. The facility operates with very limited opportunity to flex costs to business demand. Donna's team has delivered services and support to over 300,000 guests with only 15 full-time employees. She manages overtime well and is only negatively affected in very few controllable categories, most significantly utilities, and secondarily temporary staffing, the premium cost you have to pay to bring in temporary staff to accommodate serving 300,000 guests. The commission recognizes this, and we're looking forward to helping assist in addressing these areas as we go forward. More importantly, looking to the future. The commission and leadership of the Mayo Civic Center and Rochester Convention and Visitor Bureau have laid out the foundation to a comprehensive business plan based upon the framework provided by the SAG's recommendations put forth in 2013. These recommendations included a new governing body, your Mayo Civic Center Commission. Here we are. We held our first meeting on January 15th, 2014, and began a thorough review of the SAG recommendations and began implementation of five key components from that recommendation. Number one, we facilitated the integration of the Mayo Civic Center and RCVB organizations, deploying staff and talent more strategically against organizational strengths. Rochester Convention Visitors Bureau selling machine and the Mayo Civic Center and Donna's servicing teams. Number two, we implemented a new booking policy that provides clarity to both teams in prioritizing business opportunities that maximize financial and community and cultural returns. Number three, the Mayo Civic Center staff initiated an ongoing process for developing comprehensive SOPs that address service and operational performance practices that support our vision of exceptional service. That's an ongoing process. Thank you, Andy. Number four, we clarified our catering model by documenting our minimal service standard expectations and establishing partnerships with qualified local vendors. And fifth and finally, we reallocated sales and marketing functions to the Convention and Visitors Bureau to maximize resources and drive an improved focus on the new markets we know we will need for the future. I would like to thank Don, Brad, and both their respective teams for professionally managing through what has been occasionally a very difficult process. The Commission would like to further encourage the leadership teams of both organizations to work together in finding positive solutions to operational and technical challenges unforeseen by the SAG study. The Commission looks forward to working with the RCVB staff and board and city to fine-tune our information access and analytics. Going forward, the Commission, with the input of staff, has established four pillars on which our future plans and practices are to be focused. They address financial areas, customer needs, talent and technical expectations, and internal processes. Generally speaking, under finance, we expect to have a significant, sustainable economic generator for the city, community, region-wide. Secondly, customers, we will create a positive, memorable, and meaningfully exceptional customer experience across our facilities, the service provided, and the programming offered to the community. Under staffing and technology, we will create an internal culture that attracts and retains best talent. And finally, our internal processes, we will foster and create operational excellence that results in new efficiencies and positive cash flows. Our plan is to measure and monitor all related activities associated with each pillar against meaningful and measurable metrics. As an example, with the help of Andy Krogstad and the efforts from CDB, we put together and redefined our booking analysis reporting, a new document, a new roadmap. The team will have a clear picture of our revenues booked and pending by month for a rolling 5-year period. This will allow the team to employ targeted and proactive sales, marketing strategies, and tactics against specific need dates and opportunities. We'll need to continue this work. We will need to further empower both the MCC and our CVB leadership and staff. With the help of council, city staff, we will need to provide additional resources. We'll need to provide organizational latitude that will allow clear direction that supports the efforts that we are making towards excellence. In the short term, we'll be working with city and staff and managing the construction process. We will be ensuring our current guests enjoy the best possible experience during renovation. While building, I emphasize that, while continuing to build our processes and staff for the future. The long term is bright. We currently have over $10 million of revenue in the pipeline for the next rolling 5 years and new opportunities surfacing daily. Preparation will be critical, and the Commission supports the addition of 4 new full-time employees sometime in 2015. We will need to train and integrate these new positions into the organization prior to the new doors opening on Civic Center Drive. I'm thinking of the old adage, you only get one chance to make a first impression. They're not prepared, we'll be behind. Our intent is to set new standards of excellence in our service portfolio at the outset of the doors opening. The Commission will be engaging everyone around this table in the coming months. We will be asking for more authority for resource allocation. It is our belief that the Council has been expecting something other than business as usual and acceptance of the status quo. The individual commissioners have given their personal, volunteered time, commitment, talent, and energy to move this important civic asset forward. We need your help. We appreciate your support and confidence, and we look forward to delivering against the expectations we've outlined for ourselves, for you and the community. Can't thank you enough for your support. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there more, or are we ready for questions? Okay. Well, I'll start off just by saying I'm extremely impressed by the financials. Historically, the Civic Center has suffered a great deal of community chastisement for being behind, and people, I don't think, always understand the how the Civic Center plays a role in the community and the economic vitality of our community. But nevertheless, the fact that you're showing numbers that are a relatively minuscule amount compared to what you've been able to accomplish, my hat's off to you for doing that. So thank you very much. Others, Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, well, thanks for the presentation. Exciting time for the Mayo Civic Center on many fronts. One question I had is with the new booking model, and I've talked a little bit about this with Brad. I mean, having the Convention and Visitors Bureau, I think it makes a lot of sense, but it's easy to kind of get focused on the metric of just, you know, hotels. And if we have local organizations, you know, not to lose the focus on that, community aspect of it and get too focused on conventions. So I just think it's something we'll just have to watch and balance going forward, especially I'm kind of thinking of Presentation Hall and some of those presentations that local arts organizations need. So again, I think it's a good model. I think it's an exciting model, but I think it could easily get lost in hotel rooms. We just really need to balance it with local groups and local events.
Thank you, sir. I just want to highlight that. Our eyes are on the Civic Center itself. The hotel production is exceptional. We don't want to lose sight of that. But our role is to ensure that the Civic Center itself is a well-performing, well-allocated resource for the community. So we'll be looking at specifically revenues that are associated with the Civic Center specifically and making sure that we're balancing our three tiers of customer as we go forward. So we're laser focused.
We have developed, by the way, we did, through the SAG recommendations, meet directly with some of the local arts groups, and we've developed a formula for some special arrangements for them, and we're working with them regularly. We certainly understand that it's a vital part of what we do.
They're represented on the commission.
Okay. Thank Mr. Ruska, then Mr. Campion.
John, and everyone here, thank you. This was a tough, challenging year. I know it was. I watched it happen, and a few years ago when we got the vision and the idea that with the $85 million investment, we needed to have a facility-focused leadership group, we were taking 80 years of history and how we've had it done and changing that, and that's not an easy thing to do, and it takes dedication. I've seen long and, I think, challenging meetings over the last year that a lot of volunteers have given a lot of their time, but you can tell by the outcomes that it's a lot of well-thought-out work. And then I look at staff and I look at, this was something that staff could either embrace or react negatively. It's obvious to me that they've embraced it. And that's what we need, is we need a team working together. I really am impressed by the whole group and the outcome that we're at today. I still think we've got some challenges. I'm looking at some of these numbers. I don't quite see them all perfectly, making sense to me. But I think that we're making a lot of progress from where we were a year ago. And I'm excited about the future. It looks like there's more progress to be made. I did have one thing that you emphasized a lot was positive experience, making sure we're running it right and so on. A lot of that comes from the feedback of the users, and I know in the past we've had some surveys and we've done some feedback in that, but has your group taken a plan and put that in place to really measure the level of what we're doing right, what we can maybe do better in moving forward? And is that process then discussed by the whole commission or with staff, or how does that work?
Well, there's a system in place.
Okay.
We'll be honest that we need to further make that a much more robust process. You see that one of our pillars is the customer.
Yeah.
That is a primary focus for us. The metrics that we'll assign to that are in process of developing. We do a customer survey. We get anecdotal as well as measurable feedback. I think we can make it more robust, but we're not going to lose sight of that.
We had to get started somewhere. The previous survey we used was something we just mailed out and asked our customers to send back. Now we do it electronically, and we were a little reluctant because this can be pretty expensive. So we initially just started using SurveyMonkey, and we have found some weaknesses, but we are receiving responses and our rankings are pretty good.
Good. Yeah, and I know some sometimes, even if you do get some negative feedback, it might be about the city, it might be about transportation, who knows what. I mean, people will share a lot of things, and I think that that's always a good thing because it gives us opportunities to learn and to better ourselves. And I think with our, CTA program, all the things that we're trying to do in our community to be better and more welcoming to people, as well as a good community civic center, we need to listen to all the comments, whether they're negative and positive, not let them cut too deep, but let them be learning experiences and how to continue to, as you say, improve that positive customer relationship. So, good job.
Mr. Campion.
I just wanted to first, the numbers are looking good. I kind of echo the sentiments of the chair there. The other aspect that I wanted to make sure I jumped on the bandwagon here that Councilmember Hickey started is the value of the Civic Center isn't just the profit. And that focus on deriving the value for the community, I think, is really an aspect that, when it gets all number focused, I'm kind of an engineer, so when somebody gives me a set of numbers to focus on, I can get so into the data that you kind of miss the forest through the trees. So to the end, I just say, I think we're all happy with the direction we're moving. But the other side is, I want to keep hearing about, how we're making sure that these community organizations that are a vital piece of what we do, that they're being taken care of. The other side, if I can sneak a second comment in there, is the total loss to date associated with the construction is $120,000. Does that cover all operations at the Civic Center?
I believe that's actual business that have that left us, top line revenues that left us.
They were actually on the next slide.
Okay. And does that cover all the organizations under the building, or is that so Civic Theater and
no.
Arts?
No.
They're all separate.
They run separately.
Sure.
I just want to emphasize, thank you for bringing that up. We as a commission are very aware of the fact that we are not just a business. When we talk about success, we're not talking about profit or loss. We speak in the word of sustainable. We want to make sure that we're building an asset in the community that is able to sustain itself while providing the broad spectrum of services and availability for everyone in the community. We recognize that if it can't sustain itself, it might not be here. So we want to be realistic in our approach, but we fervently, when we took this on, when I spoke with Ardell a year and a half ago, it was about, let's not lose the civic side of this.
I have to give you an example of something that just happened on Saturday. We had the high school graduations, and as you all know, we're under construction, and so access is certainly available. We're doing what we can to be as accommodating as possible. But we realized something just about 3 or 4 days before graduation is that we're going to be really, really challenged with the elderly and the handicapped. So one of our staff members on his own took some initiative to contact the Boy Scouts. And the Boy Scouts came in and helped us meet people at the curb, meet the elderly or disabled at the curb, and help efficiently get people in and out. The school district couldn't really afford to add additional staffing, and we will absorb some, but we couldn't do it all either because it's really expensive. Now, we certainly would never take advantage of the Boy Scouts from that perspective and start bringing them in for a world wrestling kind of thing.
They might like it.
They might, but I think that's an example of just some of the things that we do. And we have a remarkably dedicated and committed staff. We have received information. There's research out there. Facilities of similar size who have 3 times the number of full-time employees. We get this information through a professional organization we belong to. And despite the fact that the expectations are relatively high because we are truly a multi-use facility and combining a wide variety of activities is incredibly challenging, especially when you're trying to possibly do a dance concert next to a high school basketball game, next to a country rock show. And so mixing these audiences is not easy. But we have a staff, a very experienced staff, they've been with us a long time, and they're really, really good at what they do. With that, if I can sound a little bit political, we can't do this. We can't open a brand new building and double our square footage with the staff that we have. We need help. And in order to get there and provide the services, because the expectations for a convention center are a little different than when you have people coming in for a 3-hour concert. Convention center works from 6 a.m. in the morning. People are there all day, and there's usually some type of social function in the evening. That means highly concentrated housekeeping and maintenance to keep things polished and clean throughout the day. We need your help to make sure we open this new building. And as John said, you get a first chance only once.
Mr. Mayor?
Well, picking up on the, council member Campion said that jumping on the bandwagon, I have to mention a couple things about the University of Minnesota Marching Band being here. They've been coming for 30, not every year, but 30 years have passed. So this, I think, was the 15th concert that they had. They enjoy coming here. The leadership there, they have a much better relationship, I think, with our staff here at the Mayo Civic Center than they do at their own facilities up at the university, which to some is not a surprise, but it's a fact. That value that you folks have talked about to the community, we've been able to do those the last few years of not of having it be a free concert. Now, the concert, the funds that come in, we pay for the fixed cost, but we generate enough money that goes into a scholarship. And this last year, again, I think it was 5 band members from the Rochester area. This time, I think it was 4 from Rochester and 1 from either Pine Island or Byron or somewhere. Over $1,000 a piece. Now, that in the big picture, that's maybe not a lot, but the goodwill that that generates throughout the whole area of being able to come to this concert. High school bands come here because they can bring the whole band from Stuartville or wherever for free. They either drive themselves or they'll get a school bus to bring them here. They can come to the concert, have a great experience. There's money made, and then kids that are from this area in the band, and they choose them from the staff up at the university, they get a scholarship, some of them some scholarship monies, and it generates that. And I can tell you, I hear about that throughout not only Rochester, but other areas we go to. So we can't underestimate the value of that community service that happens, and not only for this particular event, but many others that either directly or indirectly I'm involved with. Not nearly as much as I am with the University of Minnesota Marching Band. So. Good.
Mr. Bildebeck, then Ms. Means.
Just this question I got for John and Brad, maybe. Talk about, now that the facility is going, there was some discussion about how difficult it would be to book shows and events prior to getting started. Now that we're getting started, and we do have an end date out there, how's the bookings going?
First of all, that the important thing to note now, sir, is that we have an end date. We now know when a door is going to open. We now have we actually have an understanding of what the scope is really going to be that we can take out to the marketplace. Would we have preferred to be know that earlier? Yes. The booking cycle for the new events that we'll be pursuing is a 3 and 5 year window, and so will we get out of the door in 2017 with a major convention, Brad? We will.
Says yes.
Our pipeline is right now, again, as I mentioned, our revenue bookings, and this is a brand new piece of information that Andy and the team have just rolled up for us, and we're going to need to digest this further and understand more of what it means. $10 million of revenue opportunity, either booked, tentative, or in the process, available to us over the next 5 years. As we look out ahead, we look at 16 and 17, we've got some work to do. We've got to be sure that the sales effort is what we expect it to be. We'll be working very closely with Brad and the team to ensure that we're comfortable with where things are going. But $10 million of revenue on the books to work with right now at the outset, I think we've got something to work with. And
I think, Mark, I guess if you think about the process of selling something that doesn't exist, it's challenging. We've developed some tools to assist us and our team with that. And I think from a product perspective, we're having very good feedback, and we have opportunities in front of us to close. 17, 18, and 19 certainly are the opportunity here. The thing that I didn't realize would be a challenge is articulating the fact that we can host that number of out-of-town attendees at once without having a track record of doing so is challenging. And so we need all businesses and services that are relative to our business to come together and demonstrate that they can do that. So you know, prospecting and finding the events are really what we concentrated on, and now the ability to close those is where we're at right now. So this is a new adventure for the city and our industry and the folks that are involved. And the thing you have to understand too is our downtown is changing rapidly, and as that changes, so too does the players that help close that business. So, you know, we need additional rooms connected to that center. I don't think people understand that when you get to the size of events that we're looking for in the new building, you need that room inventory connected. And if we allow all the hotel growth to occur elsewhere and not in the downtown epicenter, that's a problem for the convention center. You need those rooms connected. And so, you know, we need to continue to facilitate developing downtown connected hotels. So just, you know, it's a long discussion, but those are some of the things that we need to keep our eye on.
Good. Okay. Ms. Means, then Mr. Campbell.
I just want to say thank you for your leadership. This is really comforting to have you come and share with us to give us a better understanding of your challenges. I love the idea of your quality guidelines of your mission and your goals and objectives. I don't see measurements in there. You know, what will you do if you don't meet those, and how will you improve, you know, that process? Just something to think about. And Donna and Andy, too, I thank you for your excellence through this very difficult change that we're all going through. You've been a wonderful representative and a wonderful partner. So thank you for that, and Andy.
Mr. Campion.
Construction ends end of 2016. Does that sound about right?
Just for the new building.
Okay.
It'll take a while to commission it, they call it. Get it running. Plus, we've got to take events that are currently being held in Presentation Hall, shift them into the new building for a short amount of time. The Presentation Hall won't be finished until August, yeah, very end of August 2017. Okay. So we're still going to be under that mold for a little while.
I'm trying to wrap my head around, so I think we saw four FTEs. Is that what's in here? Four FTEs. And then, so is there another set you're planning on for 2017?
Oh, yes.
And is
yes.
that, so this set is what's needed to run the existing facility as it is today?
And to get some foundational staffing prepped and ready to take over as we continue on that.
I'm assuming you guys know where I'm going, but what is the 2017? I mean, again, this is the same kind of problem I've had with the and it's not a problem. They understand it as well as any of us do, but police staffing, fire staffing, to come every year and ask for this bucket we never seem to catch up on. So I'm kind of wondering what the growth looks like here. Is it 12 next year?
I think that you heard that the city department heads have created this five-year plan.
Yeah.
And we have, in that particular, for 2017, we're looking at an additional five.
Okay.
And some of them more specialized, because we're going to get to that.
Sure.
I can assure you that the commission was also going to be sure that we're balancing against actual business volumes that we're projecting to have to take care of. So it's all about what it's all about the business volumes that are coming in. Back to the sustainability element for us. We want to be responsible. We absolutely need to be supportive of the needs, but it will be a balanced
sure.
and well-measured one.
All right.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you in the fall. Wrapping up today, we have a presentation of the police precinct feasibility report. Chief, you're going to lead off?
All right, we will. I'll leave making it up. If you recall, the council approved a feasibility study for police department space needs and potential precinct in the future. We enlisted the aid of BKB Focus, and Bruce Schwartzman, along with Kelly Schitz, and they're actually, as you can tell, they travel with briefcases and very large notebooks and know a lot more about the actual mechanics from an architecture standpoint and what actually goes into the study. What I'd remind you, though, is that this wasn't a... the question for us wasn't where do we put a precinct, and it wasn't what buildings do we build here in order to come to space. It was really to see what is the most effective, the most efficient way we can go about meeting those space needs in the future, and hopefully give you, as a council, enough time to consider those issues and plan for those issues so we're not putting you in a position where there's not a way to easily get that done. We recognize we're talking about, as you heard all day long now, the growth of the city, how we respond to that, and we obviously want to make sure that we can be effective in responding to that, as well as being efficient in how we address those issues. So we're helping and not hurting that equation. So with that being said, Bruce and Kelly will give you the actual figures, and I and our staff will step around to answer some questions for you.
Thank you, Chief.
That's a seasoned vet.
Well, council staff, thanks for having us. It's good to be here tonight. As the chief said, this was a study that we were hired to do, and just to do a little bit of refresher and background. You know, back last summer, I think we came from the council. The BKB Group, we're a Minneapolis firm that's done a number of studies over the years, and that was a question that came up by the council. Part of the study was to look at staff projections, existing space conditions, to do a programming analysis of the existing space they had and what they might need now as well as into the future. And then based on understanding the programmatic information, do a master plan of how you might address those options. And then look at the various options and understand which ones are feasible, what the pros and cons of each options are, and then do some projected cost and schedule for those. That's really where we're at right now. It's a large department. I've got a lot of operational requirements, so it did take some more time than I think initially had anticipated. So that's kind of a background of the report itself, where we're starting from. So I don't mess it up. So some of the initial information, as you can see, and you've all been given, the police department has been in this building since 1993, I believe. And so in that 22 years, there's been a good number of changes that have occurred in police operations. And so that has compounded to some of this as well as far as the operational requirements. The police department is somewhat spread around the city. There's this facility, of course, where they've been. There are some filing requirements that have been down in the airport. There's a regional training facility, which is a shared facility. When the Public Works built their new facility, North Equipment Garage became available. Some of the tactical and some of the other departments actually used some of that space. But again, it's temporary space. And then with the new North Transit facility, again, some temporary space has been allocated up there as well. You know, and then it's just a map on the right-hand side, I believe, that looks at the overall city. You know, Rochester is the third largest city in the state. And I don't need to share all that with you. I'm sure you all know that. And things are growing. But so we wanted, basically, when that diagram started to teach us, the first part of our study analysis is getting familiar with the city and the police department, so understanding the dynamic of what's going on within the city. And also, I'm going to clarify, too, some of those numbers that are in that chart are a little misleading because they also include some shared space with the county as well. So really, the space that's dedicated to the police department in this facility is about 23,600. That's police-dedicated space. The North Equipment Garage, the North Transit Facility are all temporary spaces. So again, it's looking at what they have. We started looking at calls of service and where the calls of service are occurring and how changing in the police department and the locations might happen and might make the most sense. And so we started looking at, you see the diagram on the left-hand side looks at the density of calls, so the highest volume of calls, and it makes sense. It's in the core of the city. It's where the highest level of population in the city is. We would anticipate, to be quite honest with you, that if urban development, infill development is the goal of the city, that really that core volume of calls is going to continue to stay in the core of the city. The diagram on the right-hand side is a percent of change of calls of service.
between 2006, 2008, 2012, and 2014. And again, that what that shows is very clear to us as well. As the Walmart was built down to the south, as there was a little more development to the south, that shows a higher percentage of change because of that development that occurred. Not that there's more crime down in that area, not that there's more calls of service, it just had to do with the development at that point in time. The diagram on the left is response time, priority one. Priority run, just for information, is accidents with an injury, a life-threatening medical call, or a violent act with the use of a dangerous weapon. Again, it's somewhat hard to read. You somewhat look at the red spots as the longest amount of time, but really what you see is there's a fairly good, in my opinion, the department responds to calls in a fairly efficient timeline. What you see with some of the red spots is more geographic and road access issues. It's not necessarily that there's not patrol in certain areas. It has to do with more geographic access. So again, response time, as far as what we've seen in this city as well as others, seem to be appropriate and not anything that was of concern. The other diagram on the right then started to look at, and again, this is a sample of the study that we've developed and some of the diagrams, but we didn't want to bore everybody to death with all this information. But then we started to look at where could another precinct building be? What would make the most sense? And so the diagram on the right, we know where the central station is. And we started looking at other possible areas. Police stations nowadays, and for a while actually, there's the idea of community policing. And community policing is an integrated part, and actually the council recommended that I read the Intelligent Led Policing, which is actually a very good book. So I did actually, I hadn't read that before. It was very good information. So community policing was one aspect of trying to get integrated and more familiar with the community. But the idea of a storefront or a police station where you're identified in the community is part of a planning that's done with police stations. So we started to talk about where could that occur. And then we talked about the South Precinct, and really this kind of upside-down pear shape that the city is, the majority of density right now is really more towards the north, and I think there's some growth projected right into the north as well. But what this started to do was identify possible locations for precinct building. In this diagram, we looked at just really where the city and where the police department has been, and it's just a quick staffing snapshot. It's to better understand where you were within a population of the city, where you might be within the staffing in the police department, and then the national average. And the national average, again, things that you read about police department staffing as it relates to population, is not a good rule. There's a rule of thumb of 2.4 officers per 1,000 population. The problem with that is it really depends on the demographic of the community. It can vary greatly depending upon the crime
and
threat
density.
And the density of the community, exactly.
So as we went through the study process, we toured all of the current police facilities. We walked through, we interviewed all the different departments, and really we're really trying to explore and understand what the operational inefficiencies are and what space deficiencies there are, and identify those as needs. So this list here is really kind of the high points of some of the critical key issues that we found. Bruce mentioned this visibility within the community. The police department right now, the access to that is on the second floor of the government center. There's not a real sense of a front door, and there's not really a clear presence as part of the government center. Evidence is a critical issue. There's the evidence storage is lacking. The processing facilities are also inadequate. And this is a need that's shared with the Sheriff's Department as well as the PD. Parking is a critical issue for both the law enforcement vehicles, again, a shared concern with both the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department. We'll show you the space that they're utilizing in some upcoming diagrams here. The investigations group is very much lacking staff space. A lot of the investigations group is doubling or tripling workstations. They're sharing those, and so there's definitely space issues within that department. Probably the biggest challenge is the location of the police department within the government center, and they're kind of landlocked within between the jail and other county offices. and we'll show you that in some diagrams here. There's some basic operational concerns we're lacking. Interview rooms, both hard and soft interview rooms, as well as the technology that we typically see supporting those with video technology and acoustics. Basic support space is also lacking, just training space for the PD, basic meeting space and locker room space as well as critical. Fleet service is something that we see shared between the
And it's a tough space to expand the right. service base as well. Right. So there's been some other options how we address that also.
Storage in general is a challenge within the department. The forensic space is with the forensic mapping unit. That's something that supports the vehicle evidence component. The garage space is a challenge just not only in space itself but in height and clearance. Being able to bring large vehicles through the current garage space. Patrol support, they're very much lacking in report writing space, roll call space, just basic duty bag storage. And the flow of that space is also a challenge. They're on the second floor, parking is on the lower level, so there's some inefficiency in flow there as well. And I think Bruce had mentioned too the transit facility and then the North Yard equipment facility that they're currently utilizing are really temporary space. They're not spaces that some of them may have longer lifespan than others. But I think the transit facility you're already seeing a desire for them to expand back into that.
So the summary of this sheet is you're lacking in operational space. Your police department, all the things that Kelly's just gone through, it's lacking in operational space.
So
I do want to qualify, too, is just as we start the next page, I take away Kelly's thunder, so please forgive me. But we did meet with the county. You know, we thought it was really a critical part of this study to talk to the county. It's a shared facility. The first couple items, though, just so you know, Helen Muncy did clarify there are a couple things, so I just wanted, in respect to Helen, I want to make sure that we did identify those and pick those up as minor changes. So.
Absolutely. And I think since it's a shared facility, both agencies have communicated that it's important to have that collaboration between the PD and the county. So part of that conversation has to include the county on what their expansion plans are and how those will affect the police department moving forward in the government center facility. So, as Bruce said, I think when we initially met, there weren't necessarily formal plans. The county is certainly has done some studies on courts and analysis, and there's certainly a lot of different ideas for expansion that we discussed. The work release center across the street was identified as a potential space for expansion, being able to expand outward three levels. It's 20,000 square feet each. The sheriff identified the court security access is obviously something that's currently happening and being planned for. Parking, as we mentioned, is a big problem for both the law enforcement center and just public parking at the government center in general. We didn't move that forward. There we go. Thank you. But I think the sheriff's space, or the sheriff's office was identified or echoing some of the same concerns as the police department had, where they're experiencing operational inefficiencies, they're having challenges with parking in their outer space as well, and they've actually moved some space over to the work release center to help alleviate their space concerns as well. The sheriff also noted that the additional weapons screening is going to be coming within the next year, and with that, that'll add staffing and additional space needs as well.
So the bottom line with the county too is they're out of space, and they're in the process now of looking how to address it. So it's not something unique to the city; it's both entities. And part of our analysis with that was: is there available space in this building that the police department could utilize to help with some of their space needs, and the answer is really not really.
So these next couple diagrams really are just a visual so you can understand what space is being allocated to the police department. Those areas are highlighted, what you see in blue. And then the areas in yellow are identified as shared spaces. So there's spaces that both the police and the sheriff's department are using. And this gives you an idea of the space allocation on the garage level of the facility. The main level, you know, as you're familiar, it's the jail, county office space. The PD is currently not utilizing any space on this level. On the second floor, you can see the blue areas that are dedicated to police investigations, the administration area. There's dispatch within this area, and then there's some patrol and patrol support space. The yellow is mainly shared between trainings, locker room facilities, and the records department.
So it's shared with the cabinet.
Right. This is the transit facility, and I think you can see here the area in blue is the majority of the dedicated PD space, and it's really mainly parking. It's mainly garage parking space. The shared area in yellow is a locker room and fitness space that was there for the transit facility that the PD is able to use. But really, their office space is limited to two or three offices.
And the office is identified, again, it's my understanding that the transit actually needs a space fairly soon. So again, that's becoming a little bit of a pressure, immediate pressure.
And then we've got the North Yard equipment garage, which is really dedicated to vehicle storage and SWAT team. So,
yeah. Yep, and the police department moved in here, like I said, I think it's about 2 years ago in the public works facility. Okay. So then, kind of comes to the options. You know, what's on the table? What are our options? And we're probably known to a fault for sometimes looking at every possible option there is. But the idea was how do we accommodate the space and what seems to make sense, what logically makes sense. So the first option, which really doesn't work at all, but we did it strictly for the graphic impact of it not working, was the idea of utilizing the building, the space in this building. If the county sheriff's office were to move out, does that even provide enough space for the city? And so option A was just to simply explore, does that work? Let me go back to that. Yeah, and that's what that was. Option B then was to say, similar to what we did up in St. Cloud, where they actually ran out of space and were sharing with the county, do you build a new police headquarters? Do you try to keep it in the core of the government center, the core of the downtown city? But like we did in St. Cloud, they built a new police facility. So that was an option we put on the table for discussion. Option C then started to split the department apart and really make more of this North Precinct Station that we've been talking about. Utilizing this building, and part of the idea for utilizing this building too is, again, in our analysis and what we see with most law enforcement agencies, there's a real camaraderie, there's a real supportive information when you have sheriff's office and police department working together. So I think what we heard from the county, what we've heard from the city, there's still a desire to be part of each other, to have certain departments, portions of each other in this facility. So option C says, utilize, you know, administration stays here, investigation, certain divisions stay in the downtown headquarter facility. A new North Precinct is built. And then we started to discuss the idea of the long range. One of the big impacts is vehicles and patrol. So then it starts to look at a kind of a side option of a future patrol parking garage kind of facility. So that kind of came into option C. Option D is, again, you still have the North Precinct, but if you had a smaller central facility, a new central facility. The one, and we'll get to the recommendation at the end, but these were really the four options that were put on the table. The numbers in the chart, too, should just identify the numbers on the chart on the right-hand side. These were from the program. So all of those, that's right, doesn't work on the smart board. All the numbers on the right-hand side were basically developed on our program sheets, where we looked at each department, the operational spaces, things like that. So those are the program numbers. Again, you know, it was always doing was looking at the space required on the various levels, and this shows in option A, it doesn't work. You can't fit everything in the lower level required for the police department. The second level, same kind of thing, dividing all the on the right-hand side, the chart listed there to list all the various divisions, administration, forensic mapping, so on and so forth. Forensic mapping really isn't a space that would be up on this level, but that's a minor point. But it really doesn't fit up on this level. It just doesn't have the gross area of the common area. Option B said, okay, well, city owns this property over where the, just to the side where the muffler shop is and things like that. Could a facility be built over there? And the purpose of this diagram was to see diagrammatically, does it fit? Can it work just from a mass standpoint? And it potentially could. Is it that shape? Is it that final round? It shows us. We know that there's some, you know, while there's some, clearly some things it does as far as providing a identity to the police department, providing required space, but it takes away, in our opinion, some developable land for the city as well. So while it wasn't one that we thought was the best option, it was one we explored. This then starts to look at how you can repurpose some of the government center. And again, in talking to the sheriff's office, there was a real desire to continue some of the shared spaces. If anybody's, we've got pictures in our report, so when you get to the final report, you'll see it as well. Evidence processing, evidence storage is woefully short of what we would consider appropriate for current law enforcement agencies. It needs to be redone. It's basically gutting and remodeling and doing as much as you can to appropriately allocate that space. So the idea is down to the lower level, remodel and use some of the space that's there. Part of our report looked at the idea of a primary dispatch. As dispatch outgrows their facility they're in, the primary dispatch moving up to Fire Station 2, where that space was designed for it. It's in a kind of a bunker-like environment, so it's a good, appropriate space. And then the idea was that the backup dispatch would still stay down here. So we're representing that in this option. And then we took the programming space on the upper level, the second level, and said, okay, dispatch moves out and some of that space is utilized. So it starts to look at reformatting and pulling investigations into appropriate area. Admin really doesn't have much growth. It's very minor, but investigations need some appropriate space. And this starts to look at the ways that could be, in a massing standpoint. It's not a final floor plan, of course. It's really based on program analysis. And then, so we came to the when we looked at the North Transit, again, the city owned the property. We have talked to Mr. Freeze about the idea, the concept of potentially building here, and that seemed to be a viable approach at building this location. And so we put the footprint down based on the program to see how it worked. Could it flow? Could it fit? And again, the purpose of a study, can it work? And we found out it can work. It makes sense. It provides the space that's needed in this precinct. We're not anticipating big required growth here. There could be a couple staff here or there, but the inside of the building would accommodate that. Actually, the Shakopee Police Station that we did, to accommodate some patrol growth, they went from, what, an 8x8 workstation to a 6x8 workstation. So you can actually reduce some work areas and make some of that growth accommodate. But this, and the column on the right-hand side, list all the various departments that would move to North Precinct. The next slide on page 20 starts to talk about the idea, again, like Kelly was mentioning, like the chief mentioned, well, parking is a big issue. It's a big issue for the county. It's a big issue for the police department. It's a big issue for the community, I think, as a whole down here. And I know there's some idea of this transit-oriented kind of movement of people downtown to the core, but you're still going to have a percentage of people that are going to need those parking facilities. So we started looking at a variety of options. The one where you put a parking lot right out here in the middle of your government center. Well, that's not the one that yields us a parking ramp, excuse me. It would horribly detract from the appeal of this campus. Could you go underground? That's a possibility. It could be an underground ramp. You could provide a couple levels below grade, assuming there's no major conditions. We looked at, you know, across at the workforce center and, you know, the work release center, and is that a possibility? And there's some limitations based on the grade and the orientation access, but we wanted to look at everything. And then again, where the money shop is, could a parking ramp be constructed over in that area? And so these were just options to think about. This is just putting on the table. This is a bigger picture that the city, it's a private-public partnership, we think, that really kind of needs to move this forward and try to address this. And then the police department, I know, has been in some conversations with UMR on some of their campus development off Broadway with the idea that if a ramp is built over there, maybe that's a shared ramp among multiple entities. So again, this is It's not solving the issue, it's merely identifying that there's an issue that really needs to be addressed sooner than later. Option D then was this second portion of, do you build a smaller facility? And again, this wasn't one to us that was the best. It just was an option that could look at the property. Actually, since then, there have been some other discussions about potential other properties. But again, today's the goal of our discussion today is really to get your thoughts. What do you think as well, the information? What are your concerns? What are your questions? To help move some potential options forward. We put together a really kind of preliminary implementation. So we put together a very preliminary kind of implementation schedule with the idea of continuing to move all of these things forward. The city's going to continue to grow. There's going to be space needs on all these various facilities that you have. How to strategically plan these within your comprehensive plan so it makes sense for the city. So again, well, the first thing we should is this idea of trying to figure out some implementation, some planning implementation for parking structures and how that occurs. The new precinct. Now we're, in our opinion, building a building today is always a good idea because it's cheaper than building tomorrow. When we came out of the recession, in many of the trade magazines, contractor trade magazines, they talked about construction had gone up 15% or so. And that was an inflationary factor just because of the rebound of the market. I did review some of our estimated construction costs with CPMI, who's doing some of the work for the city as well. And so we have an inflationary factor, and you'll see some of the additional information. So if a new precinct is, if the city council supports it, everybody understands the issue, and the direction is a good direction, moving ahead with it sooner than later makes sense. And then it's just a matter of starting construction when it's warm enough in our state, and going from there. So the first one we show is North Precinct, and then sequentially, to allow this to happen, you build the North Precinct, it opens up some space in this facility, you move dispatch, now you have some flex space within this facility to move people around and do the remodeling you want. So it's kind of that whole sequential process. Bottom line in our recommendation is really, again, the parking. Parking is in demand for everybody like we talked about. Begin that process. Start to look at how to accomplish it. Possibly, the possibility of hiring a parking consultant. There's a number we worked with, I'm sure you have as well. And then continuing the conversation with UMR. It's just trying to implement that and keeping sight of that to help move forward. The police study, we're finalizing all the information to a final report. Again, we wanted the council's council feedback from today to implement or to incorporate anything we hear today. But we've identified the space limitations, the operational requirements, and some of the issues. So the report says that. You'll see it in the pictures in the report as well. Cali, like we said, has confirmed similar experience. And so when you go through all these bullet points, it's identifying. Now, we think one option, too, that the county, that the city has, too, is to look at doing a baby step of planning. If the North Precinct is determined, maybe the next step then is to define the plan a little bit more, to develop the design a little bit more, and really get the cost a little more detailed than the general cost of this project. So that's an option for the city if it's agreed that this is the appropriate direction. Again, like I said, the construction costs we did an average between $230 to $300 a square foot. It's a good quality mid-level. It's not a fluent or over-the-top kind of facility. It's a good, solid construction range. I don't know how that equates. I know that the convention center was roughly about $70 million. I know the senior center is about $20 million or so. I don't know how that equates to square footage cost, but it's probably somewhat in the same range as what those facilities are as well. And then historically, the state of Minnesota, when they plan projects for the future, they historically had used 6% per year for inflation. We used 4%. Actually, we felt it was a little more kind of in line with what we've seen, especially currently. So again, the estimated construction cost based on the North Precinct, and this is just cost for North Precinct, we estimated about $16.5 million, about $16,500,000. We always added contingency to that, construction design contingency was about another million. And so the construction cost of a project like this is about $17.5 million. Again, this is based on city-owned property with utilities and things being there. If it's a separate property somewhere else, you got to look at land, you got to look at some of those development costs. Soft costs, you're all familiar with construction projects, so again, the AE fees, the fixture, furniture, and equipment that go into that project, water and sewer connections, all the plethora of other stuff that goes on top of the projects, again, that you're familiar with, which is about $1.5 million, bringing the entire project cost potentially $19 million. And then just to show you, for each year of potential delay, we would anticipate that impact potentially be around $700,000 per year. I mean, the city has to do what they're, what's right, and that's the bottom line of the study, but just to give that information. I think with that, it's just whatever questions you all might have.
I'm sure we'll have a couple. Mr. Hickey.
All right, so I think what I heard you say right, kind of right at the beginning, is you kind of did an analysis of response times, and you feel that overall the response times are adequate. So this going to a north precinct is driven more by just space, and you kind of said we have this, we already have this facility out here, this is where it could be. So the proximity to, you know, how close it is to downtown or how far away was less of a factor, and just this was a more space.
Yeah, it's interesting because fire departments are clearly response time.
Sure.
They have to be within the proximity of the folks they serve within a certain amount of time. Patrol, or police departments, was all about patrol. And again, the intelligent-led policing, you know, pragmatic diagram of that is that you're focusing your patrols in areas where your highest risks are. So the patrols are already out. So looking at a station for response time of it isn't the patrols are already there. So you're not moving from your station. Your patrols, your individual patrolmen are already out in the community. What we did start to look at though is the time between a headquarter facility and potentially there, because some of the services provided are actually going to move to North Station, and there will be some movement back and forth between the downtown, the central location, and that north. And so we feel that that's an appropriate location without being excessively far away. So we did, there was some discussion, I know, even moving further north, 65th, 75th, somewhere in there, and it really would not improve response time to the situations happening in the field.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Who's next? Mr. Wildeback.
Nice presentation. Thank you.
We didn't get an applause like
that. Okay. I know. We have a set limit of applause for the day. And they used it all. Sorry. But pretty stoic bunch.
Have you, in your studies and looks at other facilities, have you looked at multiple use buildings? And what did, where have you done that? And give us some examples.
I'm trying to think of all the ones. There's always some level, if you're smart, there's always some level of multi-jurisdictional shared space. We have done a number of our facilities, but typically a little bit smaller, have police and fire have been shared spaces. There's some training spaces. There's some things like that can be shared. I'm trying to think with some of the ones.
We've done a lot of shared municipal campuses where it's police and city hall. And I think we've seen a lot of efficiencies from a training standpoint where those spaces can be utilized for training for law enforcement, but also as shared community meeting spaces.
I mean, we did Freeborn County, but Freeborn County, to be quite candid with you, the police department was such a small element of it. Plymouth, Naval Row, Medina, were all police facilities that we've done that have had shared functions, not so more city-related with other city entities. But again, they have shared spaces. Ramsey, Invergrove, those have all been police city facilities with shared space. Not so much the county ones I'm thinking of, but only that was the only one that came to mind was really Freeborn County. Mm-hmm. But again, wherever you can create co-location that makes sense, and you can limit some of the additional space you'd have to build, because police and fire is the one that comes to mind, because a lot of times they do have to share operational space. They can share some of that training space, some of that meeting space, some of that conference space.
And when you were looking at garages, interesting enough, I had some conversation with some of our officers, and they talked about the equipment that's in the car and the importance to keep it warm. Somebody had talked to me about St. Paul keeps their squad cars on the street, but they obviously aren't having the same type of equipment that we have in ours. Was there any comparison look to see?
It's in our state, it's the preferred operational approach to have equipment for security, for protection, because not just the equipment that is in it, but it's, you know, it's weapons, it's other things. And just the very, very least, most of the have those precincts, very least have them in a fenced-in, secured area where you have to have access to get to them. The preferred approach is to have them indoors. We have done some facilities where that's phased in over time. Construction costs typically of a garage is less expensive, but it does prolong the equipment. It does prolong the vehicles. Typically, you have them over kind of a rotating basis where you sell them in for so many years anyway.
For us, I guess I'll talk up with it. Just to tag on what Mark said, I think we kind of referenced this because of an email we got. Have you ever heard of a mixed use with one of these facilities with affordable housing above the facilities?
It's becoming more and more. We have a Washington, D.C. office as well, and it's becoming more and more of a conversation, especially with some of these downtown precinct facilities. You know, you look at, again, I look at, you know, what they've done in Minneapolis and stuff, and some of the neighborhoods are in would have been ideal locations for mixed-use housing, governmental-type facilities. And that could be done as well. You could easily have, you know, our company does a lot of mixed-use projects as well. You could easily have a lower-level garage space that supports your, you know, police department, and even maybe a level that supports some residents of the housing project or whatever, and then take up a footprint for what would be the police department with a, you know, kind of an access point to take you into housing. So that could easily be done.
Okay.
And actually, that was one of the discussions when we started to talk about, you know, the South Precinct is, when we looked at the size of the properties and development of the South, it seemed like that could be way, way off before anything is needed down there. But if something is ever needed, it's going to be a very small patrol component. It's not going to be a big department. It's going to be strictly to have some staff and some vehicles in a location further to the south. That would be actually a very ideal, rather than building some small little facility, it might as well be part of the mixed use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On page 13 of your presentation, I don't know if you can go back to that. I think it says 24 in the box there, back to 13. You don't have any of the numbers in that for option A. You only have it for B, C, and D. And I was kind of looking at that, kind of wondering, you know, what it would be if that happened. And the reason, and again, you know, you said you can't check out all the locations, but I'm thinking about this regional public safety training center that's out south of town that's got land, and it's, you know, the one thing it's missing is a building, you know, and how that would tie in. There's already land there, and it seems like it would tie into that. I was, you know, wondering if, you know, I mean, if the county would move out there and be part of their that facility, would that open that up? And just kind of wondering about that plan. Is it more of maybe a little more realistic and so on? So what that would do to the square footage and everything. I know it still keeps a couple of these things are still going to be issues, but at least the expansion of that, you know, I hate to see us just leave a place and then it's empty and then what do we do with it, you know? And so if there's some way, I really think it's important that the city and the county work together on this, and that would just be something that kind of popped into my mind, is would that be an option as a usage tool? So.
A lot of the space in our program is really somewhat specific for the police department and their forensic management unit. There are some of the components that they have specific to them, but it does make a lot of sense that the facility being built there that supports, again, this multi-jurisdictional training, that training space would be ideal.
Well, I know when we built it, the one thing that we came up short was obviously with the shortage of funds, the shortage of being able to complete it properly. And when I was out there, I'm like, this place was really lacking an indoor facility so people can train and be there and go indoors if the weather's bad. And yet it sits there empty. And so, you know, I'm just kind of thinking in a long-range plan, does that make a little sense to try to consider that as an option too and you know, to kind of tie that in and make it more useful?
Makes a lot of sense.
Well, you talked about garage space, second level versus first level. Is there a preference to have parking on the same level of the offices, or is there?
You know, again, like Kelly was saying, in this facility where you have officers and equipment and whatnot on a second level and they're down in the garage, it's a little inefficient. Whether you're moving through stairs where potentially somebody could trip or fall and there's a liability issue there, whether it's just trying to use the elevator's way for that timing is not always the best. One level is the most operationally efficient, but if you had to have a garage, a lower level garage, you know, it can work well.
I think we've done a lot of multi-level police departments, and it's really more about operational flow that's lacking here. Typically, we'd see a flow of coming in from the garage, that evidence would be right there, that locker room facilities would also be right there, duty bank storage, that sort of thing. Here, all the patrol. patrol support is up on the second level, so there's some separation there. So it's not that a multi-story facility can't work, it's that the parts and pieces need to be designed to operationally work.
I agree with your comment also about evidence, but one of the things, and when you're talking about response times, however, if there was an evidence room out at the north facility, it would get the officers potentially back on the street much quicker than if they had to come downtown to book evidence and then go back out. So in that way, it may have some effect on response time, putting the officers back on the street and making them that type of a use of the officers' time.
That's actually a very good point, because we also are planning some interrogation, kind of temporary holding space up there. And again, if you pick up a potential suspect, then you've got to do some debriefing with that individual. Rather than having to bring them down here, you have that capability. So that's a very good point.
All right. Other questions?
Could you clarify that response time issue? I think Councilperson Hickey had a question when you said the response times were acceptable. I assume you're not advocating that a 12 to 28 minute time is acceptable.
No.
It simply doesn't change by virtue of the fact that we have a precinct station.
It basically, Chief, in our opinion, looking at where it is, none of yours, I mean, you do have some little spots here and there that have taken longer, but a lot of times that's geographic or access related. It's not, in other words, in our opinion, of looking at it, your patrol is out where they need to be to respond to most calls in a very timely manner. I personally, unless I'm wrong, correct me, but I don't see that the station location is necessarily, other than the point of being able to get back to the road, is going to necessarily improve that.
Right.
So,
just wanted to clarify that we're not advocating that response times are acceptable if you're looking at it in terms of overall with our existing staff and employed adequately.
Yes. If we had seen a lot of really, even in your core areas, I think your department does an admirable job with what you have on the streets.
That would be the discussion to follow, is whether that's what we have on the streets. I think that's where that's going.
Well, yes, and of course, and as the population grows, and that's a whole different issue, the higher the calls go, the more backed up the officers are, the number of calls, and that's a whole diagrammatic or kind of dynamic aspect to the plan that we know is going to occur over time. And that's what this study is starting to address, is what happens when. So.
All right, Ms. Canton.
I think the kind of holistic view of the future of the police department, unfortunately, has been crammed into 2 half-hour segments, which probably doesn't do it justice. And I have a number of questions. I think follow along the line of Councilman Ruska's questioning here about, you know, what kind of incremental things can we do? Because I'm sure it'll come as no surprise to you that a $19 million price tag, when we're getting about $53 million a year in tax revenue, is something that we all kind of grimace at, trying to figure out how to get that structured in. So the chief has told us a number of times about how not everything can be done incrementally, and sometimes you have to kind of take the big steps. But at the same time, I think we've gotten a pretty clear message about, you know, it's not necessarily being the dramatic direct effect on what the police response times are. You know, how do we then kind of do things incrementally to get there? And that was one of the things, frankly, I found a little bit lacking in what we got, was that, you know, two of the options kind of laid out a few different, what I, in my opinion, probably not in yours, were pretty dramatic different kind of setups. And then setup A, which was the most incremental, I felt kind of got dismissed right away, whereas, you know, we may need to explore that simply out of, what we have available. So, I won't belabor it too much, because frankly, I don't think, unless we're willing to stay here until 8 o'clock at night, which I'm sure I get shut down well before, I don't know if we would have time to do it. But I think the kind of laying out a plan that's a little bit more incremental about what can we do with a little bit spending that's probably not going to be at the $19 million in any individual year, or even in any 3-year cycle, how will we do that?
That's a very good point, because I think there are some options to do that.
Okay.
Mr. Bilbeck.
I do think, though, that this is a great starting point. You have to have a starting point, otherwise you can't figure anything out. But looking at the number, page 13, are these buildings, would they be built to be expandable? mean, it looks like you're looking at only a small amount of need growth in these departments. However, if Rochester goes through a spurt like it is in those areas that are shifted, would these buildings be built to be expanded?
You know, the interesting thing with option, the North Precinct, where it is on the potentially the transit site, we didn't look at a lower level garage, but you could potentially do a lower level garage and take up less footprint on the area and build with the ability to go further. So you could create that option that would allow you, it doesn't give you some of the incremental expansion, because the first thing that came to my mind, even though I haven't run this past the police department, is you look at potentially building your some of your parking in the future, but you could do a lower level parking and then go through and would allow for this, that future expansion. The site as a whole, if you were to build on the one level like I talked about right now, doesn't support that.
And the programs were done projecting out 15 years. I think the other thing to point out with when we're looking at police studies, so much of the program is operational and infrastructure type spaces, the parking garage, the evidence, the locker rooms, roll call, large spaces. When you start adding staff to that, especially to patrol, they're really on the street. We're not adding a lot of physical space to those areas. So I think the projections that we have in here accommodate that. It's really important to right size those infrastructure spaces. So.
Okay. Ms. Means.
Well, I think this report was excellent. Give us all some framework to think about in the future. The incremental build out, I think, might be very important. And I'd like to see that, and probably even more time allocated just to the police department, so that we're not so rushed as we go through this. But what I see right now, what I believe I understand, is it's a challenge right now with the space issues, and not having, it's not the response time, but the parking, the interrogation facilities, and those kind of things. They need space, and how do we accommodate something like this? I mean, down the line, if it is incremental, even if it's incremental, in terms of funding, are there grants?
We haven't done any review of the financing aspects yet. It's something we need to information to provide for you.
Are there grants available?
I doubt you'd have any grants to be able to fund this. I do believe you can borrow the money under a certain program without a referendum, although there's a reverse referendum possibility. But obviously, you'd have to levy the debt service.
Mm-hmm. I think that was mentioned. I think that was mentioned in one of the emails as well on bonding.
Okay. Yeah. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see
it. I assume you can bond incrementally also.
Yeah, it's a lot of
money. We'd have to do a little more review of the financial feasibility options.
Okay. And again, we work with a number of our projects. We work with Ellers. We work with Springstead. We work with them to provide them the general information so they can do the tax impact analysis. And that's all part, really, when you think about it, it all fits into your comprehensive plan. How do you get there?
Echoing what others have said, I like the idea. This is a great start, and I would like to see more of that incremental strategy, and then tie that with, what are some realistic financing options that might be out there. And as Mr. Ruska said earlier, I think we do need to kind of think outside the box here and talk about multi-use facilities. We know we have a drastic shortage of affordable housing, for example. If this is an opportunity, if there's some other models in other communities you mentioned, I'd love to hear more about those. So, again, I think we shouldn't think in terms of single purpose, a police precinct. It'd be ideal if we could get something more multi-use. Mr. Kansas?
Hampton.
Maybe the one thing I'll add to that is I was excited to see the use of the existing public works kind of lot, because I think that's when we were talking about our inventory of available spaces out there that might be utilized in the future. Having that kind of, at least people starting to take a look at what can be done out there, because with a facility that's as first class as that particular facility is, it'd be good to get, hopefully, I think they saw the lightning strikes or whatever, but it'd be good to get other buildings, you know, kind of clustered together, take advantage of some of the economies of scale we can get that way.
Something that wasn't, again, we're here to support the city, and if there's other options that come up to potentially look at, we want to support you in that effort. You know, recently there was the idea of maybe there's some available existing facility, available existing property that could be remodeled or expanded. And again, if there's something that's, you know, roughly, I think the program police department function, not including the garage for North Precinct, was roughly about 40,000 square feet. So if there's a facility that's got the infrastructure, it's a solid enough building, there might be an existing building out there as well. So again, we're willing to look at multiple options to help explore what might be.
Just look at the old Pepsi building.
Sorry,
the old Pepsi building, that's got a garage, and, you know, I mean, it's Northwest, decent location.
It's very good. Well, matter of fact, we did one out of our Virginia office out of D.C., which I think we ended up looking at 13 different potential locations. We had developed an entire matrix of costs, priorities that fit the really what the community was trying to do. Mm-hmm. We've looked at a number. I mean, we can help with those kinds of things.
When you explore the multi-use piece of this, can you identify other opportunities other than affordable housing over the police department?
We'll add that to the final report. We'll do some research on that and identify where it's occurred before and how it's been used.
Because
there is mixed-use things that can be done.
Sure, thank you. We could have a Nordstrom's out there, you think?
Shields,
okay.
Shields. All right, anything else for today? It looks like this will start a good discussion, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I don't believe there's anything else for this afternoon, so we are adjourned.
I love it.
Your shoulders on this.